Yes, it's coming up. Here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Had no reason why I did a pregnated pause there as if I was about to announce something special, but no, not really. But all I will say, it is 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
We're sorry. The number you have reached, 99.5 WBAI, is now off the hook.
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook, the show that occasionally is heard at this time on Wednesdays, and this is one of those times. So if you're listening right now, it's your lucky day. Yes, Off the Hook is back. We were not on last 3 weeks, I don't believe. So here we are. This is Emmanuel. Over there is Kyle.
Yes, indeed.
I got the name. Okay.
That's been me.
So long, I almost forgot your name.
That's the right name.
Unfortunately, the other co-hosts of the program have since retired because it's been such a long time since we've been on. Yeah, I'm going to keep this up all hour. I'm going to be rubbing it in all hour long. But no, we do have some special guests tonight that, funny story, we'll tell you a little bit later. But joining us from, I believe, the German Republic is Mitch Altman. Is that correct? I see his mouth moving, but I don't hear any words. Okay. We've gotten good at this, but apparently not good enough. Somebody's muted somewhere along the line and figured in the last 3 years we should have gotten this right. I want to try again. We have the potential here on our end. We have Mitch's connection. Anything else that we could possibly be muting? Mitch, you have to say something, otherwise we don't know if he's still muted. Okay, while we're figuring that out, we have another guest. This is why we have two guests. And coming from the wilds of the Yukon, we have Greg Newby.
Hey, can you hear me now?
I hear you fine. It just goes to show.
Awesome. And it's a pleasure to be here. I am in the Yukon, and I'm very interested in hearing more about this off-the-hook retirement plan. It sounds like something maybe I could buy into.
No, you don't want that. It's not a good plan. But it's this is testament to the fact that the telephone always is dependable and always works in the end. So we're talking to Greg on a good old-fashioned telephone line. Are you on a cell phone or a landline?
So this is an interesting story. I'm on what you would call a landline, except it's actually a radio telephone. So I'm not connected to the electrical grid or the telephone grid, but I am on a regular phone with a regular dial tone.
Wow. Well, that's great. And we have the same here. So it's basically kind of a landline-to-landline situation.
Amazing.
Glad you made it. And I want to try again with this this other technology.
What's going on? Hey, Mitch has a cat in back of him. Look at that.
That's, I think, the engineer.
No, that's the problem. That's definitely why it's not working. But we just have to bypass the cat somehow and get his audio back. The video is great.
So I have audio now.
I hear you.
Now, Mitch. Skype automatically connected me to the mic. It thought was good and not the mic that I normally use. So the cat is not the problem. It's the technology.
Well, the cat
itself.
Literally just jumped up on the table while you were talking. You might have heard the thud. So the cat, if the cat is not the problem now, it will be the problem sometime this hour. If that's for sure. Boy, that cat has energy. That cat took off and there was, you know how in the cartoons there's like a little puff of smoke? I saw the puff of smoke. That's incredible.
Yeah, the Warner Brothers people definitely had cats. greetings from Berlin.
Berlin in Germany. I got the country right. That's great. And Greg is in the Yukon. We're here in New York. So basically we're covering a good part of the planet. So that's good to know. Now, funny story. I said I'd tell the funny story. We weren't on last week. We were preempted at the last minute. Literally the last minute. And there's a story behind that. You might have heard that we moved our transmitter a couple of years ago from the price gouging Empire State Building to the much nicer Four Times Square, a little bit further north in the city, but not quite as high. But unfortunately, there's a little feature that comes along with that new site. They were doing maintenance for about, it felt like a month. It might have just been a few weeks, but it was in the middle of the day, literally from around 8 in the morning to around 5 in the afternoon for an entire week at a time. And, you know, you don't have to know a lot about radio to know that pretty much cuts into your broadcast day something fierce. And when you're trying to raise funds constantly, as we are here at WBAI, because we don't have any commercials, well, you find yourself at a disadvantage. Now, we are not the highest fundraisers on the radio station, unfortunately. In the past, we have been, but, you know, things change and, I don't know. But for some reason, there are other programs that, if you fill them in, they get more of a response. So, you know, I can understand why, you know, the last minute notification, that was a little annoying. But I can certainly understand why the station needs to think of its future. That's the most important thing. And, of course, if you do support the station, I would hope that you would support the station by either calling 212-209-2950 or going to the website give2wbai.org. That's give the number 2wbai.org and showing your support and saying thanks for having this amazing place. So we had you guys scheduled last week. We wanted to have just the two of you on. And, of course, you made all these plans. You canceled a wedding. There's all sorts of things that, you know, you did just to join us. And we really appreciate that. And we had to tell you, oh, they canceled the show at the last possible minute. So we said, okay, next week, meaning this week. And then we found out about a couple of hours earlier that they wanted to cancel us again this week to raise funds again. And we had a discussion about it, and it was rethought, and here you are now. I'm not sure if we're going to be on next week or the week after. You know, it's a week-to-week thing. The important thing is that the stations stay on the air. So, you know, as inconvenient or annoying as it might be to us or our listeners, let's just not forget that is the main goal, and that is something that we have been successfully doing since 1960, so let's try and keep the station on at least until 2060.
Yeah, the time is absolutely critical to contribute, wrangle as much support, spread the word, tell people about programs, and let's look at our accomplishments. Having weathered so much over the years, this is not insurmountable, but it really is about getting as many people to sign up, become recurring members, part of the WBAI Buddy program, or just a one-time gift. It's that end of year season. So think of giving a tax deductible donation,
yes,
to this wonderful nonprofit here in the city of New York, mm-hmm, and serving so many communities through our web presence And we do as much as we can here, so please give back. Think of us that amount, anything you can do, a small donation, incremental donations over the year, please do what you can. It makes so much of a difference, and we hope to continue capital improvements and getting programming and other exciting new things off the ground. But we need the support.
I look forward to seeing the studio again. We haven't seen the studio in 3 years, you know, so, or actually 2 years, but still, 2.5 years. It's been a while, and I'd like to actually see people again. That would be nice, but obviously we're not quite there yet, but we've made a lot of progress. But I think this also points out the importance of radio. Like, people say, why don't you just do a podcast? And the podcasts are all fun, glory, and all that, but you don't get any, at least in our case, you don't get anywhere near the same audience as you do with radio. I know other podcasts do. Ours does not. So, and I think this also is proven by the fact that the station was off the air, but broadcasting on the internet, and we weren't able to reach our goals because online simply wasn't enough. On air is what matters.
Well, and podcasting has become very popular, and it is a quite saturated and intense marketplace of ideas and time. There are very long, lots of audio, long form productions. People are getting really into it, and commercial, non-commercial stuff. We like the path we've navigated so far, and a big part of that is radio, being on formats that are not necessarily the same as the tech we talk about. But it's critical that we have a voice. There's so many different things going on with legislation, going on with the public airwaves, the society, the community in general, and when there's an emergency, a crisis, when you have to get the word out, whatever it may be, we want to be here. This station, this type of broadcasting, community radio in general. So that spirit is just as important to us as being able to share with you just our thoughts for an hour in the evening or on some other mode. You know, either way, it is important to us to be able to share. But this would be not the same if we abandon this format.
Now, I'm only comfortable if I know my voice is emanating through the atmosphere from a transmitter somewhere. You know, that's how I feel comfortable. It's not the same thing to have your voice going through a wire or, you know, on Wi-Fi or anything like that. Just not the same. Not the same feeling. Plus, there's this other amazing part about radio. You never know who's listening. Online, you can look. You can see. You can actually see the IPs of people who are connecting. It's a lot more intrusive, a lot less privacy. Radio is anonymous. Radio, you can just be listening under your covers. You can be listening in your car. There's all sorts of magic involved in that unknown. And you find out later how many people actually were listening because they remember. They talk to you. They say, I heard you on the radio as I was driving across a bridge. And you know, these moments matter. So to all the people listening to us now on 99.5, it's good to have you back. It's good to be back. All right, folks. Sorry, we've talked enough, Mitch and Greg. Anything you want to share about radio or perhaps things that you're up to right now?
Well, I definitely support the WBAI mission and encourage everything you just said. It seems like there's a lot going on in the tech world. I have a lot going on with my own personal telecommunication. Wouldn't mind telling you about some of that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also interested, though, to hear a little bit about Mitch's travels. You know, Mitch is kind of the, I think of you, Mitch, as kind of the Johnny Appleseed of making and soldering and building and Arduinos and stuff like that. And I know you've been out and about, and I'd love to catch up on that as well.
All right, let's talk about those things. And at some point during the hour, we will tell you how we managed to get kicked off of YouTube. Yeah. again, actually, we had an incident during Hope, but this was a bigger incident that happened since the last time we were on the air. So we'll talk about that as well. But first, I want to hear what you guys have been up to. Mitch, why don't we start with you? If that cat doesn't hit you in the head.
No, he's
jumping all over the place.
he knows, he's very energetic, and he's like 2.5 years old, and you should have seen him when he was a kitten.
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't go on my keyboard. He's the only cat I've ever had who doesn't go on my keyboard, and he knows when his claws are out not to break human skin. So he's a good kitty cat.
For now he is.
Yeah, but he's also, I've been traveling a lot since March, and I just got back from a maker fair in a town, the second biggest town in Czech Republic, which is very difficult to pronounce because it only has one vowel and it's at the end.
Well, you're going to have to try to pronounce it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, I'll try to pronounce it Bruno. The Germans, they just put a vowel in there, and they just call it Brun.
Wait. How do you get the U sound without a vowel?
You try it.
Well, I'm assuming it's spelled B-R-U something, right?
So, no, it's B-R-N-O.
Really? There's no U there. Wow.
Yeah, there's no U. I remember a long time ago, back when there used to be a Yugoslavia. Remember that?
Yeah, totally.
And then our illustrious country decided to bomb the hell out of it. And but the Onion had an article that said there was a serious lack of vowels there, and they were going to do a vowel drop.
Wow. Okay. That's
what I think of when I go to a city with a name that has only one vowel at the end. But it's a really cool town. A lot of universities. They have a maker fair, and it was mobbed. It had a really beautiful early 20th century architecture building, exhibition center. I did a bunch of workshops, too, just for teachers, to teach teachers how to teach this kind of tech. And then two for general public, people of all ages. Of course, people soldered, and I can say solder now because I'm talking to the United States of America, not Europe, where I have to add the L sound because there's an L in that word, remember?
Yeah, but they make you do that?
Well, people in Europe, if you don't pronounce the L, they look at you very oddly. And same with in the U.K., so I have to say solder, and that always sounds weird to me, but it sounds normal to people here.
Well, yeah, they do look at me very, very oddly. It's good to know why now. I didn't know that was the
there
reason.
There might be other reasons.
I always suspected there were, but you make it sound so simple. So all I have to do is throw that L in there, and they'll stop looking at me like that.
Try it and see if it helps. It helps for me in certain occasions.
Okay, I'll get off the plane and start shouting solder and see what happens.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will look at you strangely, but, you know, your mileage may vary. So I was there, and because of that, the cat has missed me, so he's now very excited that I'm home. And, I'm also now, you know, so there's this annual Congress conference in Germany, put on by the Chaos Computer Club that you and Kyle are aware of, and Greg as well, and many of the listeners. This would have been the 39th Chaos Communications Congress, but it was only going to be called the 37th because the last two, well, pandemic, you know. And
just can't get to that 40, can we?
Well, time keeps happening regardless, and the black hole of a pandemic, of black hole of time during a pandemic. But, it was canceled. So they couldn't really decide what the best approach would be to have a huge congress of many thousands of people, getting together in a beautiful hall in Hamburg. Couldn't figure out what the best approach might be while a pandemic is still happening with unknown rules and regulations about to hit. So they canceled it, and now they're pushing for a decentralized one. And a lot of people are stepping up to the plate, including us here in Berlin. We're going to try to rent the place that it used to be at when it was in Berlin, the Berliner Congress Center.
That is such a great idea. The BCC, the Berliner Conference Center, was where the Chaos Communication Congress used to be held. It was the most fantastic setting, but it can only hold about, 2,500 people or so. So CCC grew really, really big and moved to a much larger place. But I think it lost some of the magic. I've always hoped that someday they would somehow have a conference there, maybe at the same time as the Congress or something independent. It seems like this might actually happen, though.
Yeah, it's definitely happening. We may or may not be able to have it at BCC because we got a quote from them and it was rather extensive. But we negotiated with them and they dropped the price considerably because they really like the idea of CCC people coming back to BCC. So there's a lot of C's here and a B. But no vowels, you'll notice. but there are other options. There's another possibility that just came up today, and that the city of Berlin, I believe it is, or maybe it's the federal government here, offers a grant for putting on conferences, and they'll pay up to perhaps 60 euros per participant. And if that's the case, then maybe we can have even tickets for outrageously cheap. The biggest problem we would have if this is actually going to work for us is how do we have a conference of only 999 people, that's our limit, when there are way more people than that who want a ticket.
Yeah, well, that's always been the problem, that could be mitigated, I suppose, if there were lots of conferences going on in lots of cities throughout Germany. But Berlin, obviously, is the big one.
Yeah, and especially if it's at the BCC, because a lot of older folks like us who've been to BCC when it was happening there really have fond memories of it, because it's a beautiful place and it's a perfect place to have a really cool conference in Berlin. So, we have the voucher system where we'll give vouchers to people and then they can give it to people and then it self-replicates once someone gets a ticket. It's kind of complicated, but it works. New people will come because people are friends of friends of friends. And if you give vouchers to people within the community, then people within the community have a chance to go. So it's not ideal, but it's an okay enough compromise, maybe.
Maybe we can limit the stay to like an hour. You know, people can go there, but they only stay an hour, and then a whole new flock of people come in for the next hour, and that way we can fit everybody.
Yeah, timeshare it. Probably not.
No? All right, I'm trying to help you. I'm coming up with ideas. But
appreciate it.
There are no bad ideas.
No, there's just stupid ones.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So what else? Any Maker Faire? That sounds awesome. I'm glad there are still Maker Faires around. I really miss the big Maker Faire that used to take place in Queens. And, you know, as we found out, we already knew, but a lot of people found out this summer with the Hope Conference, Queens is an awesome borough, and you can have a lot of fun in Queens, and we certainly hope to have tons more fun in future years with future Hope Conferences. But, boy, I do miss the autumn Maker Faire that used to take place on the old World's Fair grounds in Queens. Maybe it'll come back someday.
I hope so. The organization that put on Maker Faire and Make Magazine went out of business, but then they reformed with a slightly different name, and I'm not sure what the status is of Maker Faires at this point. But in Europe and elsewhere in the world, people are still using the branding, even though it's, I guess, unofficial now, as far as the original, company goes.
So if somebody wanted to host 100,000 people in the middle of Queens and really make, a lot of kids really, really happy and show technology and learn, teach soldering and all kinds of other things like that, they might be able to license the name and do it that way. That's a possibility.
Yeah, they definitely can do that. And I'm not even sure if there's an organization that licenses the name anymore. Maybe. But Make Community, I think, is the name of the organization now, and with the original person that started it, Dale Doherty. They were fantastic. I was involved for 5 years at the beginning, 5 years from 2006 to 2011, pouring my heart and soul and volunteering into helping grow that community. And, yeah, it was super, super fun. And I haven't been to a Maker Faire in so long. So it felt really, really good to be there. There's Maker Faire, and they pronounce it without vowels again, so I'm not going to attempt it. But the Czech Republic has I think, 8 Maker Faires, and Bruno is the most recent one, and they're going to do more, and people who I taught how to teach are going to give workshops at the next ones. And I look forward to more of those. But there's a lot of conferences that have been happening this summer since they've been allowed, as Hope was allowed, which we're so grateful for. And so I've been teaching soldering or soldering, depending on where you are in the world, at all of them, and also giving talks. And I was in the Czech Republic just 3 weeks ago for, and again, there's a lot of words about vowels, which I won't pronounce, but it was a really cool conference, which is thankfully shortened with an acronym, HCPP. And HCPP is in an organization that has a parallel society that only works with cryptocurrency payments. And these people are really going for trying to make a new world separate from our capitalist society. It's kind of interesting. Anyways, I gave a talk where it has one of my favorite themes, which is getting people to quit jobs that they don't like. And after the talk, three people promised to quit their job, and one person already did. So I think that was successful.
Wow. Greg, we can't see you, so if you have any questions or things you want to say to Mitch or in response to what he's saying, please feel free.
Well, congratulations to those people that quit their jobs. That's a great, courageous step forward to whatever's next, and resisting the fear of what's next, I think, is an important message.
Absolutely, definitely. Any other adventures, Mitch, or is that pretty much summing up since Hope?
Oh, there's been so many places that I've been, but that's probably enough, because the other places were similar kinds of stories, and and I love doing this. I've been going around the world teaching people since 2007, and people often say, well, doesn't traveling get you all exhausted? And like, yes, of course it does, physically, but psychically, I get way more energized, and I can always sleep, so I do. And then I wake up and do it again. And
Can you outline the places that you have been since you were in Queens this summer?
Let's see, where have I been since then?
And by the way, if you like a place with no vowels, go to Wales.
I've been to Wales. Actually, that was one of the places I went to.
Okay, there you go.
North Wales. There's a friend who I met through going to Chaos Communications Club events, who bought a small cathedral or a large chapel made out of stones, very big stones with a rose window and everything. He's got a hackerspace there that some people live in. And there's a really nice community there. He calls it Astral Ship. And when he has an event there, he calls it a voyage. And, a bunch of hippies, how we are. So it was super fun. And we had a bunch of workshops. There's some small organic farms there. And I showed them how to automate some of their processes that was very manual intensive for keeping small plants alive. And now a lot of that's automated. So they can hopefully grow better quality food and more of it with less effort. So, that was a really cool thing.
Go ahead, Greg.
I just want to plug your Instagram, Mitch, because I saw some of the pictures of this, and they were fantastic. And I know your Instagram is public. So people that are interested in this type of setup, it's sort of a whole environmentally focused or sort of a minimalist or I don't even know what to call it, sustainable, environment for growing stuff and making stuff. I think did he have a brewery of some sort also or something? Like there's some alcohol involved, but vegetables and all kinds of things.
But there's a group that makes their own beer over there, and I don't drink, so I couldn't taste it, but other people say it's really good.
And what was that Instagram page again?
I think I'm Mitch Altman 23 on Instagram. And everywhere else I'm Maltman 23, but that was taken on Instagram when I got it. So.
Now you were listing some other places you had been?
Let's see if I can even remember. My brain is kind of tired right now. I was just in a sauna all for the last several hours before coming home to be on Skype.
What a life you lead out there, Mitch, I got to say. It's incredible. You're talking to people who buy cathedrals and just wandering around Europe teaching people how to solder. If you know how to solder, you likely know it because Mitch taught you at some point. Think about that.
Yeah, I've only taught about 90,000 people how to solder, and I wrote a comic book for the people I haven't taught directly.
Okay. Well, comic books are the best way of learning. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. So any other places you remember, any other countries?
I was at EMF camp. And that's in the UK. There were 5,000 people there, and we set up a large hardware hacking area. I hang out with a lot of Belgians, and there's this one Belgian who has a gigantic bus that has a gigantic tent that attaches to it, where we can seat over 100 people underneath it, and we made lots and lots of food. The previous camp that we did the bus, we went through 120 kilograms of potatoes and made fries because, you know, Belgians need to make fries, and I'm an honorary Belgian. I don't drink beer, which kind of gets in the way of the honorary Belgian thing, but they had plenty of that to give to other people who enjoy it. Let's see, where else? MCH I couldn't go to because we couldn't avoid having it on the same weekend as Hope.
That was the Dutch hacker camp that we were supposed to be simulcasting, but we never heard from them during Hope. But I heard it happened, and people were happy with it.
It did. They had a tent where they could talk to us in that one classroom, upper floor in St. John's. Anyways, there's lots of travels in there, and being in the old country was really good to visit friends, and of course there were 1,200 of my closest friends at Hope, some of them new friends who I'm definitely keeping in touch with, and who I'll see again hopefully here in Berlin at the end of December, which is when Hacking in Parallel, HIP.
So, that would be the second HIP, because Hacking in Progress took place in 1997 in Netherlands.
Yeah, and it's sort of a nod to them as well.
All right, well, hopefully they don't nod to you in a courtroom and take action against using the same acronym, but we'll see.
Because I'm friends with the person who named that one.
Okay, all right. Hold on to that. Greg, tell us what you've been up to.
Well, nothing quite as illuminating. After the Hackers on Planet Earth conference in Queens, it was mostly catch up and rest and carry on. I had my only travel actually was I had a foot race in Alberta, sort of a couple hours out of Edmonton, last month. So that was nice, exhausting, as they always are. And otherwise, I've stayed at home, carried on with workplace stuff, getting ready for the winter, which has started here in Yukon. We got snow on the ground, and we'll probably have snow on the ground for the next 7 months.
Wow.
And also I'm very distracted with trying to figure out an internet solution post-ExploreNet, pre-Starlink, which that'll be my scenario in the new year on January 1st, having sort of a shortage of internet here in the home front.
Well, yeah, it's a challenge where you are, because you're off the grid, right?
Yeah, it's kind of doubly challenging. So of course, being off the grid always creates its own challenges. So I don't have an opportunity for DSL or an actual fiber or copper line coming to my house because I'm off the grid. But also, I'm in a northern community a little bit north of Whitehorse in Canada. And Canada is about like the U.S. as far as rural internet, which is to say not good. Rural internet is not so good in the U.S. and it's not so good in Canada, despite having received incredible government subsidies over the years to the telecoms. So it's not good in the first place, but also I'm off grid, so I can't even get the stuff that's not so good that my, you know, that my neighbors have. They have the DSL and complain about it. So my, my situation has, two components, not counting the radio telephone that I'm talking to you on now, but the, for internet, we have, the mobile cellular data. So your regular, you know, LTE4, mobile cellular network, which is, not always terrible, but sometimes it's terrible due to capacity limits. And then also we've had something called ExploreNet, which is just like HughesNet is in the U.S. So this is a geosynchronous satellite. So you have a dish, a Ku band dish that points toward the southern sky. And this is actually remarkably reliable, but it's kind of laggy. And also, not, in other words, the latency is not so good. And also the congestion is an issue, so we do end up, particularly in the evenings, with very, very slow internet service. And just to give you an idea, like a typical sort of low-end DSL might be 150 kilobits downlink speed. And we're kind of lucky if we ever see that. Like every once in a while, we'll get a megabit, but we don't reliably get DSL speed with ExploreNet. But and that's a fascinating technology, the geosynchronous satellite technology is great stuff, very important. These are in the same realm as our TV satellites and a lot of other important telecommunications satellites, 22,600 miles in the sky. The particular satellite that we use for this company, ExploreNet, is, however, deorbiting. It's run out of propellant, and it reached its end of life a couple of years earlier than expected. So suddenly we got a note earlier in the year. Actually, it came up 2 years ago, and then they extended. So we got a note earlier in the year that they were decommissioning the satellite at the end of this calendar year. So we're going to be down to mobile data only, and which, as I mentioned.
They didn't have a plan for that? They didn't have a plan for decommissioning their satellite?
I think they have a plan that involves people elsewhere that are going to pay more money for their services. So rural, and this is why telecom in rural areas is so bad in the U.S. as well, rural areas just don't have the density of people to make the dollars that these companies want to make. So I think they maybe eventually have another satellite going up, but at the same time, they know that low Earth orbit solutions are what's coming in. And so Starlink, of course, is, you know, the Elon Musk company, where the satellites are, you know, on the order of a few hundred miles high instead of 22,000 miles high, which is interesting for a variety of standpoints, technical standpoints. But the same companies that have the geosynchronous satellites, their next step is to do the low Earth orbit satellites rather than more geosynchronous satellites.
So now when Starlink starts operating, do you know when that will be? How will that affect you?
It's an unknown. So Starlink is available, and they have a coverage map, and they've been in the news for providing coverage to Ukraine, which is, it turns out to be pretty important for their purposes and, you know, fighting off the Russians there. But in order to serve the northern communities above about 54 degrees, and I'm just a little bit above that, a little further north than that, they have to have polar orbiting satellites as opposed to satellites that are more more close to the equator. So if you look at a given satellite, it's sort of looping around the Earth and precessing, but it doesn't go too far out of its zone where it launches. So they haven't launched the polar satellites yet. They've only done, I think, 3 launches, and they need 8 launches. So we're waiting patiently for Starlink to decide that that's enough. One thing that's cool, recent news, is that Starlink is now selling their service to airplanes that go across the poles, and as opposed to ones that are just sort of in the middle latitudes. And in order to do that, they have to launch these other satellites. So I'm sort of hopeful that they'll be doing it by the first quarter of 2023, which is kind of what they're talking about.
Quite a challenge. I mean, you know, next time we complain about our bandwidth, I guess we should think about, you know, you up there in the wilds of the Yukon and getting by with a couple hundred kilobits.
It's like the thrill of a high-speed modem almost. You know, it's not a whole lot faster than that compared to, you know, fiber to the home type of situation. Yeah, and of course we do have Iridium. Like there's, you know, there's a couple of other services, so you know, we can use a InReach type of phone or like a Garmin, you know, tracker, spot tracker, these types of things. So it's not that we don't have coverage, and we can watch TV. You know, we have those satellites are still there, but in terms of the bidirectional internet, there's very few choices that are available up here.
Well, you know, in a way, it's kind of refreshing. I know that's not much comfort if you really want to do something online, but still, you know, the way people are attached to being connected constantly all the time, they forget the magic of just, you know, being in a forest or in a field or something like that. So hopefully you get some comfort from those moments.
Well, we get both. Uh-huh. Yeah, we get both. We do get the magic of being in the field and looking out over Lake LaBerge, which is the lake that's in the cremation of Sam McGee by
the
Forest Service.
Great thorn.
So literally
yes.
out my window. Yeah, so I'm in an amazing location, and as soon as I leave the small coverage area of my mobile booster device, I have no mobile phone service. But at the same time, I do appreciate the value of having somewhat better internet, because often it's just unusable. Like we literally can't, you know, watch a video, load an email, whatever, because all the kids are home from school watching YouTube and playing games and stuff like that and sucking up all of our precious internet.
Yeah,
so we do appreciate it when there's a shortage, that's for sure.
That demand is immediate, yet these projects have taken so much time and dollars to be projected, and people making these sort of sales business decisions around it, not really acknowledging in the process just how many lives are really out in the wind without it. And even in suburban areas, you get incredibly slow speeds like you referenced over DSL. And, you know, not to mention rural areas like where you are and, of course, off the grid. I just am really encouraged by some of those connectivity projects in far-flung places. Just hearing more about them, those can then become hubs for other modes of connectivity like wireless. So fingers crossed, but I can see you're sort of straddling it there. And like you're saying, it's like unusable, and you're really just paying for the ability to pay a bill. Like you can't even go online and pay your bill with the service that you're paying for, and that is it. You know, if it's unusable for the demand you have now, it feels just really pointless. So
but it
sounds like you're getting creative.
It truly is disenfranchising. You know, and this has always been the argument for rural telecom, you know, all the way back to when we were just talking about basic phone connectivity and then modem connectivity and things like long distance charges, was it's disenfranchising to not have access to this or to just pay a high multiple of what everyone else is paying to have basic ability to, you know, order from the Sears catalog on the phone or have 911 service or things like that. And yeah, it's a brutal story of how the telecom industry has taken government subsidies and charged really high prices and just failed to deliver at the rural level.
And these are problems that a lot of First Nations communities are facing constantly because they're in remote areas, many of them, and they simply don't get the same level of service and are forever at a disadvantage. It really it can be extremely frustrating.
And you see the same dichotomies in cities where, like, oh, all the condos, they have great internet there, but these other places in industrial and other parts of town, they don't get anything, or they get subpar service. The investment doesn't ever get there. It can be just as distinct in a densely populated area or like suburban area.
You know, Greg, you were mentioning how it's impossible to stream a movie online. It seems to me that if there is ever a place where a video store could still survive, it's where you are.
Well, there are. Yeah, there's one in the little mini mall, not too far from where we drive into town. So yeah, there are still video stores here. I don't think there's actually a Blockbuster, but there's a homegrown one, which is even more surprising. Yeah, we do. You know, we are able to get videos, and people watch Netflix and all that sort of thing. But it's not always available because of congestion. You know, it's just sometimes unusably slow because there are too many people trying to use the network at the same time. So so we're looking for. One thing this has done for us is we're looking more carefully at outer space, because of the, you know, the potential of these low Earth orbit satellites being a real solution and an equalizer for rural internet, because not only is it you know, good for people that are just off the beaten path a little bit further north, but it also is a solution for people that are in a truly disconnected area. So people that are, you know, on a highway or in a park or something in the middle of nowhere. And so, so I find myself paying attention to, Starlink and their various, competitors. You know, SpaceX, of course, is the one that puts up the Starlink satellites, and, you know, looking at the couple of other competitors to them, like One Earth, OneWeb, but a couple other companies that are promising to do the same thing, but so far only one company is actually doing it at scale, which is a Starlink company.
So that's fascinating too. I mean, what does it mean? I think is what I'm hearing in your comments. What does it mean to have a competition for this at that altitude? And you know, when it gets competitive for certain coverage areas, or would people in a certain area that maybe have an interest in owning the infrastructure, are they even able to access and compete? I mean, can you launch satellites like that? I mean, it's really kind of turned that into a marketplace that, I don't know, it has its own limitations and barriers, much in the same way broadband rollouts are the same, like relying on big investments.
This is off the hook. We're broadcasting for another just under 10 minutes, I think. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. We're talking to Greg Newby out there in the Yukon and Mitch Altman in Berlin. I wanted to tell the story about YouTube, because it's kind of momentous and kind of crazy what happened to us. As you know, we have a program that follows this program called Off the Hook Overtime. It starts at 8 o'clock. It's on our YouTube channel, Channel 2600. You can catch the link on the top of the 2600.com page. We got a notice a few weeks ago. it was addressed to Channel 2600 from YouTube, owned by Google. And it said, "Hi, Channel 2600. Our team has reviewed your content, and unfortunately, we think it violates our misinformation policy. We've removed the following content from YouTube," and it was our entire overtime show for September 28th. They continue, "We know that this might be disappointing, but it's important to us that YouTube is a safe place for all. If content breaks our rules, we remove it. If you think we've made a mistake, you can appeal and we'll take another look. Keep reading for more details." Under how your content violated the policy, this is what they say. "Content that advances false claims that widespread fraud, errors, or glitches change the outcome of the U.S. 2020 presidential election is not allowed on YouTube." And in addition to, I'm as surprised as anybody to hear us accused of that. In addition, we basically were told that there was a strike against our account, and that further such behavior would result in our channel being permanently shut down. Yes. The channel that hosts all the content for every Hope Conference would be shut down because Google, for some reason, thinks that we were spreading election lies. Now, Google would not elaborate on what precisely they were accusing us of. As you may know, we've been outspoken defenders of the 2020 presidential election, so to be accused of the exact opposite was a bit of a shock. We were given the opportunity to review the content, but they didn't tell us what the actual problem was. They just pointed to the entire 60-minute episode. Well, we did a bit of listening, and we figured it out. Going to play you a minute excerpt here and see just what it was that triggered Google. Listen.
"Whatever we have at the time and our takes on it, we're certainly not experts. We're relying on one another's perspectives to inform, you know, overall consensus or maybe, you know, what priorities are in light of whatever the stories are." So, and I don't know. We do as much as we can.
Yeah.
And we want to give people an opportunity to talk, too.
And, you know, sometimes our minds change. Sometimes we're convinced. Sometimes we find out that, hey, I'm wrong. I wasn't informed completely. Now I am. And I've changed my perspective.
Yeah, and you get more information over time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Things have a different appearance over time.
That election was stolen.
It was. And let me tell you why. I'll tell you that as soon as I tell you why all vaccinations are bad. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know, we can joke, right? We can, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, from time to time, it's allowed.
Yeah.
No. It's not allowed. It's no longer allowed in the world of YouTube. So I made a little joke. I made a little joke saying, hey, guess what? The election was stolen, pretending to be an election denier, and that got Google to ban our channel, to shut us down. That's just, it's unbelievable that that actually happened. So we filed an immediate appeal. All kinds of listeners were weighing in on this one. Within an hour, we got a message back saying, after taking another look, we can confirm that your content does not violate our community guidelines. You think? Wow. But they didn't answer any of our questions. How did this happen in the first place? Was this an automated process or somebody who had no sense of humor whatsoever? What guidelines are they utilizing? You know, we support restrictions on hate speech and all kinds of blatantly false information that's designed to mislead the public. But we've mentioned that we stood up for our democratic elections. We sided with science over superstition. And we also believe a company can make whatever decisions they want as far as their own systems go, provided they're not discriminating against people based on race, religion, sexual identity. But what Google did here was well over the line. Even if they do legally have the right to shut out people, they consider it to be spreading lies, because this time they went after sarcasm, whether through artificial intelligence or humorless human. Such behavior is certain to have a chilling effect on free speech of all sorts. Now, people have been sending us all kinds of hints as to phrases we should avoid, methods of expressing opinions that won't cross the line and get us kicked off of YouTube again. And we're grateful. We thank them for this. But we're going to continue to use sarcasm whenever we deem it damn necessary. And we do it quite a lot.
A lot, a lot.
And we're going to continue to talk to people with differing opinions. And if someone were to call into our podcast later on and express alternate thinking on anything from elections to vaccines, we would engage them in some form of conversation, attempt to get them to reconsider. That's our call, not Google's, not Facebook's, not Twitter's. We're not going to be intimidated into avoiding the conversation altogether, lest Google somehow takes offense. And you can count on us doing this a whole lot more in the future, because that's how it works when you tell hackers they can't do something. They do it 10 more times. Boy, that annoyed me. Just to wake up at 3 o'clock and see that your channel has been shut down. It's just, it's so wrong. Guys.
We're testing the limits here. This is probably phase one of testing the limits, which is to play back what got you booted in the first place and see what happens when the WBAI episode goes up live on YouTube.
Let me tell you right now, well, this doesn't go on YouTube, but Overtime, which follows immediately, goes on YouTube, and that is why we're going to start the show. So if you want to see a kerfuffle, folks, join us over on YouTube in a few minutes, 8 o'clock, channel 2600. Follow the link on 2600.com. We will continue this conversation over there in just a few minutes. Please write to us, oth@2600.com, and we will see you again soon. We hopefully will be here next week, maybe in 2 weeks, maybe in 3 weeks.
Watch what you say. Alphabet's listening.
Cut. How great was that? Is he worth the money? Okay, here we go, folks. Start to win. And a smoke. And we're back.
I need a Pepsi. I need a Pepsi. I need a Pepsi.
Cut. That's great. Let's look at these.
Why is this commercial?
Hi, I'm Lee, and I'm using this to sell you milk.
Pepsi. Pepsi.
Hi, I'm Lee, and I'm using this to sell you milk.
Pepsi. Pepsi. Pepsi.
Hi, I'm Lee, and I'm using this to sell you milk.
Feel good about Pepsi. Feel good about Pepsi.
Hi, I'm Lee, and I'm using this to sell you milk.
Pepsi. Pepsi.
It's that last 1 foot, I call it, in the supermarket, where that 1 foot between your hand reaches.
reaching this direction or that direction is an emotional one. And that's the bonding you want to get. One foot, I call it. One foot. Got it.
You're picking people to represent traditionally perceived roles for black people. Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, the servants, the original role here, the black athletes, use the role that people are comfortable with seeing blacks in to help sell a product. But don't use blacks in roles that are expanding the parameters. They're putting blacks in new and different settings.
Hi, I'm Herschel Walker. I'm not just running through a line when I say, hi, I'm Herschel Walker.
I need a Pepsi.
Feel good about Pepsi. 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 Feel good about Pepsi.
And that's why Michael, whose face you like, or we know that a large number of people are crazy about him, as soon as you see him, say, oh, I wonder what this is going to be about.
$5 million to star in two 90-second ads. Pepsi.
Are you sure you want to use a celebrity?